sadosham apinat yajet savaram bahidoshena tumena gnir ivavratha. Every endeavor is covered by some fault. Just as fire is covered by smoke, therefore one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In conditioned life, all work is contaminated by the material modes of nature. Even if one is a Brahmin, he has to perform sacrifices in which animal killing is necessary. Similarly, a Kshatriya, however pious he may be, has to fight enemies. He cannot avoid it. Similarly, a merchant, however pious he may be, must sometimes hide his profit to stay in business, or he may sometimes have to do business on the black market. These things are sometimes necessary. One cannot avoid them. Similarly, even though a man is a sudra, serving a bad master, he has to carry out the order of the master, even though it should not be done. Despite these flaws, one should continue to carry out his prescribed duties, for they are born out of his own nature. A very nice example is given herein. Although fire is pure, still there is smoke. Yet smoke does not make the fire impure, even though there is smoke in the fire. Fire is still considered to be the purest of all elements. If one prefers to give up the work of a Kshatriya and take up the occupation of a Brahmin, he is not assured that in the occupation of a Brahmin there are no unpleasant duties. One may then conclude that in the material world, no one can be completely free from the contamination of material nature. This example of fire and smoke is very appropriate in this connection. When in winter time one takes a stone from the fire, sometimes smoke disturbs the eyes and other parts of the body. But still, one must make use of the fire despite disturbing conditions. Similarly, one should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupational duty in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. I will read again. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, when connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and that is self-realization. This material world there will always be obstacles that must be overcome. Sometimes these obstacles are coming from forces outside of ourselves. Sometimes the obstacles are coming from the elements of material nature. Recently we were with many devotees on yatra to Jagannath Puri. And certainly all of the devotees that came were very much excited and enthused to hear the glories of Lord Jagannath, of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, very much desiring to participate in the joyful kirtans of the holy name. However, it was very hot. This heat was a major obstacle for many to stay awake in the class, to want to even move in the kirtan, what to speak of serving devotees, going from place to place. So sometimes obstacles come in the form of heat, and other times in the form of cold, sometimes in the form of wind or rain. Other obstacles come due to our inability to be the supreme controller of technology. Sometimes the microphone doesn't work, the electricity goes off, the fans make too much noise. Or other times, other people are obstacles. People are making so much noise. People are cooking all terrible things and we are smelling it. Sometimes people are attacking us, trying to kill us, trying to stop us, trying to defame us. So many obstacles. And other obstacles come from within ourselves, that we basically are unable to fulfill our duties. We don't have the qualification. We don't have the potency. We don't have the energy. We don't have the health. So there are obstacles coming from within and without. It is the nature of this material world. Every endeavor, Krishna explains in this verse from Bhagavad Gita, is covered by some sort of fault in this world. Just as fire is always accompanied by smoke. Fire is very pure, and smoke is not very pure. If it is very cold in the winter, fire is the greatest source of material happiness, whereas smoke is the greatest source of material distress. I remember years ago when I was living at New Vrindavan community, very austere place in those times. In the winter, so cold. We lived on a little mountain, no electricity, no central heating, and it was so, the house was very old, so many holes in it, there was no insulation, everyone just slept on the cold floor. Sometimes the whole house would be covered with snow. You'd have to dig your way out of the house. You'd have to somehow get the window open and just start shoveling the snow out. Sometimes snow 6, 12, 18 inches high. Very freezing winds. The winds just seem like they're ripping your body to pieces. And they're all coming inside. And the only source of hope for warmth is fire. So we would go out and look for a tree that was already dead. because you're not allowed to cut down living trees. So we would find some dead tree and we would chop it down with a little axe. Like that. Then you have to cut it in little pieces after it hits the ground. Then we had one very lazy ox who would only take small pieces. We'd tie it to the ox. And he would lay down until he saw it was a small piece. You'd have to keep chopping it until he was satisfied that it was not too heavy. Then he would stand up. And we had a stove in the temple room that was meant for heat. Devotees were so freezing. The floor was so cold that even before the kirtan started, everyone would be dancing. Just to somehow keep their feet off the floors for as long a duration as possible. How high they were jumping. So we would try to start these fires. And the fire would give some heat. But because usually the wood was wet, it would give off so much smoke. People were choking due to the smoke. And their eyes were burning due to the smoke. They couldn't even see the deities. The whole room would just be filled with cloud of smoke. Burning, eyes choking. People would run outside into the freezing winds and snow just to get relief from the smoke. And then they would be so freezing outside, they'd come in to get the benefits of the fire. But within seconds, they'd have to run outside to get free from the terrible pangs of the smoke. So this is a crude but true example of how fire is very nice in the winter, but smoke is simply a disturbance. But you cannot separate fire from smoke. They are always together, sometimes to less degrees and sometimes to more degrees. So Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita how every endeavor in this world is covered by some sort of fault, just like smoke always accompanies fire. However, it is being explained here, according to our nature and our occupational duty, we must perform our duties. And people will always point out the faults. And we will always know what type of faults. However, if we perform our duties for the satisfaction of Krishna in devotional service, then the entire duty is purified. Our effort is perfect. And we achieve the goal of life of self-realization. So this verse is especially teaching us how to perform devotional service. Sometimes devotees come and say, it's very difficult to chant japa. My mind is wandering in so many places. If your mind wanders away from the holy name, that is a fault in chanting. Pure chanting is when the mind is fixed in Harinam. And when your life is free from offenses, there are 10 offenses to the holy name. In the clearing stage of chanting, still, sometimes we make offenses. Sometimes our mind is wandering. However, if we are performing that act of chanting japa for the satisfaction of Krishna, under the direction of Krishna and his representatives, then our motivation and Krishna's reciprocation with our good intention that we're trying to please him, satisfy him, that will purify our activity. And the faults will not even be considered. Sometimes we are asked, please cook for the deities. But we do not know how to cook. That happened to me once. I was pujari, and there was a cook. I never cooked prasad. When I was a little boy, I was assistant head cook for a hospital. But that wasn't prasad. That was something else. So I never knew. I didn't know the deities. Every day they get samosas, this offering, pakoras, this offering, certain type of sabji, this offering, chapati, sabji, halwa, gulab jamun, rasgullas, sandesh. So many preparations, kichoris. So the cook left because it was too cold and too much smoke in the kitchen. So they said, well, there's no cook. You cook all six offerings every day. This is the menu. But I don't know how to cook any of these things. I'm not qualified. So one devotee came up to this jungle where we were living. One devotee came up from the other area. And he just said, you watch how I cook. He stayed one day and cooked all the offerings. Then he was a cook for 10 years. He was head cook of the biggest center in all of ISKCON at that time. He came and he said, now you know everything. And he left. So I was wondering, then whatever I cook is going to be filled with so many faults because I don't know cooking. But I was told, you just do it for the satisfaction of Krishna, and Krishna will accept your devotion, however many faults are in it. So we all have our experiences. We're asked to preach. What is any of our position to preach? Every one of us, it is our responsibility to help others become Krishna conscious. But we do not know everything about the philosophy. There are so many intricacies of Krishna conscious philosophies we may not be so well versed in, and we may not have complete realizations of what we're talking about. We're telling people give up sense gratification, and while we're saying it, we're thinking of sense gratification. We're saying you should give up all sense gratification. But while we're saying it, we're thinking, I have to end this preaching because I need sense gratification. We may not actually engage in that activity, but we're thinking. So many faults. So the tendency is, I cannot do it. I cannot cook because I am not so expert. I cannot manage because I never went to college and studied management. His Holiness Srila Jayadvaita Maharaj, he never even completed high school. Did you know that? He doesn't. What to speak of? No college. He never even got a diploma from a high school. He left school at a very early age. But yet, he's the senior editor for the International Magazine of ISKCON. So expertly he does it. When he first met Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was giving him books to help edit. How? Prabhupada, you just do it. You do it for my satisfaction. Krishna will help you. We may have faults, but we should never think that those faults are an excuse for me to give up my prescribed duty. There may be so many people who could do it better. But if we are asked to do it, that is not a consideration. That is a common excuse amongst devotees when you ask them to do something that they don't like to do. There are so many people that can do it better than me. So please do not ask me. But Krishna is not concerned with who can do it better. Krishna is concerned with the devotion, the intention of how we're trying to do it for his satisfaction. Krishna was telling Arjuna to fight against the Kurus. There was Bhishma, there was Drona, there was Karna. So many powerful, great, great warriors worthy of his respect and worship. Krishna said, do not be concerned with whether you win or lose. Be concerned with trying your best for my satisfaction. If you win, you will gain the emperor of the ship of the world. And if you lose, you will go back to the spiritual world. What is the loss? So every endeavor in this world is covered by some sort of fault. However, we should earnestly and honestly be very, very determined to perform our duty wholeheartedly, knowing that whatever faults may be there, Krishna will not consider them if it is done with a sincere spirit of devotion, as the servant of the Lord. In this way, devotees can be very bold and enthused in any situation. At the beginning of our Hare Krishna movement, there were devotees who just went to a couple weeks of lectures hearing Prabhupada speak Bhagavad Gita. And because they were new, his Indian-sounding accent, they couldn't even understand exactly what he was saying, and there was only one book that he had. They didn't have volumes of books. And some of these devotees, after a few weeks or a couple months, he would send them to a foreign land and tell them, open a center. Every activity is covered by faults. They didn't know so much mridanga. They didn't have much practice karatals. They didn't know so much cooking. They didn't know such philosophy. However, they would go, and they would chant, and they would give lectures, and they would cook, and soon, 100 people joined their temple. Big, big buildings donated. How is it possible? Because they simply had faith, if I please my Guru Maharaj, by my sincere efforts, however many faults there may be, Krishna will be satisfied. And when Krishna is satisfied, he can empower us to do wonderful, wonderful things. At New Vrindavan, the devotees built one beautiful, beautiful memorial or Pushpa Samadhi for Srila Prabhupada. When they started this project, they didn't know anything. There was no master plan. There was no architectural drawings. There was just on the back, on the inside of a brown paper bag that they put fruit in or something, they just sketched with the pencil some squares and design and let's start like this. They didn't know anything. And please do not think that it just went up so smoothly. Everything they built was wrong. They had to tear it down and do it again. Sometimes tear it down 3-4 times and do it again. Practically every brick, they'd put it up and they'd realize the cement was not proper and they'd have to take it down and put it up. But somehow or other, they could have given up. We do not know construction, so why are we trying to build this building? None of us have ever worked construction in our entire lives, and we have no money to hire construction people. We have no money even for materials. We don't even know where the brick is going to come from next for tomorrow's work. So by all material standards, there was nothing but faults. Fault in management. Fault in ability. Fault in no funds. However, they simply wanted to please Guru and Krishna. And after a few years, hundreds and thousands of people are coming to see the most amazing building in America. Architectural experts are coming to marvel after the architect. Construction experts are coming to see. Artists are coming to see. Colleges, big universities and colleges are sending their classes in construction, design, art, to see it and to study it. And when they talk to the devotees say, "We don't know how it happened. We don't even know what we're doing. Somehow it happened. With all our faults, we just tried to please Krishna, and this is what came out of it." And no one got paid one paisa. Everyone did it for free. All the work. Because it was done for the pleasure of Krishna. So Krishna is telling us that yes, whatever you're asked to do in Krishna consciousness, there will be so many faults. But we should not be discouraged. We should be encouraged. We should be encouraged because if somehow or other we earnestly and honestly attempt with great determination to just carry out the desire of Krishna, then that satisfaction of Krishna will purify all of our endeavors. He will accept it as devotional service. That is one of the very beautiful characteristics of the path of bhakti. When Krishna came to Vidura's house, Vidura, his wife, were so nervous to serve Krishna. All they had in the house was some bananas. They were peeling bananas, but because they were so nervous that they were giving to Krishna, they were throwing banana outside and giving Krishna the banana peel to eat. Now, would you say that there is a fault in that type of service? By material standards, that's a fault. But Krishna was eating the banana peels, very happy, totally satisfied. More satisfied than all the luxurious, opulent foods prepared by Duryodhana, which he rejected. Because of their sincere desire, their faults were purified, their endeavor was purified, because it was pleasing to Krishna. So we should see this in our own life. But it is equally important to see this in other devotees' lives. It is very easy to point out so many faults in others. Sometimes they are correct, and sometimes they are not correct. Sometimes we see faults in others due to our own perception or our own selfish motivations. Or it may even be due to our own spirit of trying to achieve perfection. We may see faults. And from a professional point of view of improving the overall service and the project, we may, in a spirit of service, point out that it could be done better in this way. But that is not finding fault with someone. That is trying to help someone. Finding fault means, look at what you are doing, and look at what I am doing. Why are you so low, and I am so high? However, we must take into consideration that that person's endeavors, although it may have faults, if it is honestly and earnestly being offered to Krishna, it's actually pure. The endeavor is purified by Krishna due to the sincere efforts of the practitioner of bhakti. And this must be considered. Otherwise, we can make the aparad of offending Vaishnavas, which is very difficult for our spiritual progress. So we should always be looking for the sincere desire. Someone pleasing Krishna is actually far more successful in his effort, even with some fault, than another person who is perfectly doing it in pursuance of their own ego. That is true. There are many such examples of this within our scriptures. Sripad Ramanujacharya, he came to one city when he was on a yatra from Srirangam to Tirupati. And there was he had two disciples in that place. One was a very rich man and one was a very poor man. So the rich man, he made so many grand, wonderful preparations for Ramanujacharya, perfectly. However, he did not honor Ramanujacharya's servants. The other person, he was very poor. He had nothing. It's a long story. His wife had to go out begging. But somehow or other, Ramanujacharya was very happy to accept it because it was done with honest and sincere devotion. He rejected the other person who made perfect arrangements because he did not have the proper spirit of humility and service. So the quality that Krishna sees is this quality of devotion, our sincere desire to please Him and serve Him. And however many faults we may have, we should be very enthused to go on with our service. And however many faults other people may have, if they are sincerely trying to serve, we should honor them and support them. We may try to help them to overcome whatever faults may be there. But we should honor and support them. That is so important. Especially in a place like Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Many devotees are engaged in so many activities. Management. Very difficult. We were speaking earlier. It's not so difficult to manage people who are just being paid under you. But to manage intimate friends who you grew up with, very difficult. Because they have a different relationship. In Vaikuntha, when Narayan says, "You do this," everyone says, "Om Namo Narayanaya," and they do it. But in Vrindavan, where Krishna's relationship is not master-servant, but friendship, when Krishna says to the cowherd boys, "Do this," the cowherd boys say, "No. I will fight you." "Yes, let us fight." And then they'll go to Mother Yashoda and say, "Krishna lied. He ate dirt." Mother goes, "No, no. I didn't eat dirt. We saw he ate dirt." You don't say that about God. You don't say that about your employer. But your intimate, loving friend, it's a sweet relationship. so many different levels that we all have to consider on a personal level as well as on a professional level. But what is most important is that we try to sympathize and recognize each other's efforts in trying to serve, in trying to please Sri Guru and Gauranga. This is so very important. It is always easy to point out faults, but we should imagine ourselves in the other person's position. In America, they say, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Or in India, put yourself in the other person's chattels. Very difficult. Sometimes we think, oh, I should be in that position. But then if you have, then you get your karmic reaction. Sometimes you get the position. Radha Gopinath Temple, we have five presidents. Why we have five presidents? Many reasons. One reason is that everybody knows what it's like to be president, so everybody's very sympathetic to the president. A lot of cooperation. Because they know if I don't cooperate with him when I'm president, he may not cooperate with me. It actually works much nicer and more harmonious than that. But it is good to sympathize and understand what a person is going through, especially when you're taking instructions or guidance from that person. We should all look for two things simultaneously. There is a fine line that must be balanced in the practice of bhakti. And this is so very important to understand. Even slight misunderstanding in this principle creates so many problems. Because when we're performing devotional service on a practical level, two things are taking place simultaneously. One is we are individually and collectively endeavoring to strive for professional perfection in what we're doing because it will push forward the mission of Sri Guru and Gauranga. That's one level which must be seriously considered. The other level is, beyond whatever mistakes we may make, it is the heart's offering of love and devotion to God that's taking place in everybody's efforts. And therefore, that endeavor, if it is done sincerely, is spiritually perfect. There's no fault in it. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse that in narrating the transcendental pastimes and teachings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if it is composed with all sorts of errors and faults, it is still heard, taken pleasure in, and worshipped by great souls. Because the subject and the purpose, the motivation, is faultless. So on one level, a devotee is making many mistakes, but is doing it very sincerely. On a spiritual level, it's free of faults. But on another level, there are so many faults. So how do we deal with this apparent contradiction? What you're doing is perfect,
but full of imperfections.
Hare Krishna.
What she has done is perfect, but full of so many imperfections.
Can a materialistic person understand such a phrase? But devotees understand. Sincere effort for Krishna is perfect. However, the execution, due to our inabilities or immaturities, may be imperfect. So we must simultaneously see the perfection of a person's spiritual motives, and we must honor that. We must bow down in our heart thousands of times to that. But at the same time, for the sake of the mission, for the sake of the service, how it will influence others, we also have to see the faults. So you should not see the faults, and you should see the faults. It seems like devotees go crazy. How to accommodate both of these ideas simultaneously in the same mind? This is the art of Krishna consciousness, especially management. Management, very difficult, because it's specifically the manager's service to investigate and detect faults. But at the same time, he has to see the sincere, humble desire within everyone's heart and honor that and worship that and know that it doesn't matter if there's any fault. Very difficult. Hare Krishna. So Krishna consciousness is that science of being detached, but at the same time very, very alert to perform our service. The prominence in our inner mind should always be to see the sincerity of a person's devotion. But it is also our service to try to bring that person's external execution of service to higher and higher and higher levels, individually as well as collectively. But each devotee simultaneously has to develop this type of spiritual vision. Bhagavad Gita was spoken in this environment. Krishna is telling Arjuna that you fight. It is your duty. You cannot avoid it. But at the same time, Krishna expected Arjuna to fight with the highest professional precision. But Krishna also explained very carefully to Arjuna, it is not your professional precision, expertise, that is going to win this war. It is my mercy. And my mercy will come when you just try your very best according to my desires. When Arjuna was fighting with Karna, Krishna understood Karna is a better warrior than Arjuna. They are on the battlefield fighting. Karna is going to win. Unless Arjuna cheats. He will. According to a Kshatriya's code of conduct, you can never fight an equal unless they are armed and prepared to fight with you. Krishna told Arjuna, cut off his head. Hare Krishna. Arjuna didn't want to do it because this would be a fault. It would be a fault. We remember it even 5,000 years later. However, Arjuna is ultimately glorified for that. Not, he is criticized by materialists, but he is glorified by spiritualists. Because he did it for the satisfaction of Krishna. He had to do it to serve the purpose of Krishna, even though there was a fault. And therefore he achieved perfection. Another example that took place in the same battle was Maharaj Yudhisthira. Dronacharya was fighting so viciously, he was breaking every rule of the Kshatriya conduct. He was fighting after the sunset, he was so passionate, he just couldn't stop. Generally the policy is when the sun sets, the war must end. Everything is done in daylight when everyone can see what's happening and there can be a fair fight. And everyone can get nice rest at night. So he was fighting in so many things and he was just so powerful, so destructive. Sometimes the nature of the waves, or material nature, they come like waves. When you coast on that wave, you're just undefeatable and indestructible. Do any of you have that experience? Sometimes when you're giving lectures, you're just, a certain wave comes and you can just, any time, no preparation, just philosophy just dances from your tongue, illuminates the universe. Another time, for weeks at a time, you can't think of what to say. What am I going to say? Who am I going to talk to? What quote? Sometimes athletes, it's called a winning streak. Some mode of material nature just comes upon them and they just can't do anything wrong. Just everywhere they throw or hit, it just goes right in the right place. And other times, everything goes in the wrong place. The same person with the same training, sometimes weeks at a time of just losing, everything wrong, and other times months at a time, everything is right. You're infallible. So this is the way the world is. So somehow or other, Dronacharya was on this winning streak. Nobody could stand before him. He was like death personified. He was devouring the entire army of the Pandavas. There was only one way to stop him. Krishna told Yudhisthira Maharaj, you have to tell him his son is dead. Ashwatthama. Yudhisthira Maharaj said, but he's not dead, he's alive. How can I tell him like this? I have never spoken a lie in my life. Yudhisthira was called Dharmaraj. He was so honest. Can you imagine? He never said anything untruthful in his life. He never even thought in his heart of anything untruthful. How many of you are like that? He never even considered the most remote possibility of thinking anything untruthful or unkind to another living being. That is Yudhisthira Maharaj. So he had reputation that his chariot would not touch the ground because he was so truthful. And now Krishna is telling him to tell a lie to such an exalted, respectable person as Drona, who was his own teacher. It would ruin his reputation as perfect truth, always. So Krishna made a compromise. You tell him Ashwatthama the elephant is dead, because there is an elephant named Ashwatthama that's dead. So he went up to Drona and said, Ashwatthama. And just when he said elephant, Krishna blew his conch shell. So what did Drona hear?
Ashwatthama is dead.
Now, if anyone else were to tell Drona, he would not believe it, because Ashwatthama got a benediction from Lord Shiva. He couldn't be killed. So if anyone else told him, he would have said, "You're all nonsense. It's not possible." But Yudhisthira, if he says it, you have to believe it. So he gave up his desire to fight. So in this way, every endeavor may be covered with some sort of fault. However, if without selfish motivations or egoistic idea, if we are sincerely, earnestly, honestly trying to satisfy Krishna, then that effort purifies our endeavor and it is perfect. And this is how we must endeavor in our own life in devotional service. And this is also how we must respect, honor, and at the same time help others. If we see a fault in another, but they're sincerely serving in their execution in a very humble and respectful way, actually your service is better. I may be physically doing it better than you, but you're pleasing Krishna more than me because of your humility and your devotion. So therefore, I'm going to tell you how to do it better as your humble servant, not as your critic or your master. And this type of consciousness creates spiritual environment of unity and love and devotion. So especially a place like Bhaktivedanta Hospital, the endeavor should be done with sincere and honest devotion, but at the same time the project requires very high level of professionalism, efficiency. And our perception cannot see it in an improper balance without causing a disturbance. It will terribly disturb the whole spiritual atmosphere if we're not willing to see the sincerity of a person's effort and how they're pleasing God. But at the same time, if we just think everything's all right because everyone thinks everyone is serving God, our service will not be effective in fulfilling its purpose to the society and to the world. Therefore, we must very carefully understand how to balance in Krishna consciousness according to this teaching of Bhagavad Gita, of today's verse. And we have to, the same principle apply within our family life, amongst our friends in Krishna consciousness, and especially within our own life. We should be striving for excellence in how we make our efforts, and we should always remember that it is the quality of humility, it is the quality of devotion that makes it pleasing to Krishna. But also, our willingness to work very hard simultaneously, to do it to the best capacity we can with our mind, body, and words, that is also simultaneously pleasing to Krishna. Krishna doesn't want us to be humble and do nothing. And he doesn't want us to egoistically do everything very perfectly. He wants us to humbly strive to do everything to the best of our capacity and work very hard, but be very respectful to others and understand
that I am not the doer. It is all by the mercy of Krishna. And give the credit to he who deserves all credit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through glorifying him and chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare.
Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. Is there any questions on this subject? Or any comments? My millions of faults in trying to present this important lecture to all of you. I'll keep trying. With Prabhupada's mercy, we are fortunate. I'm nothing but faults. But somehow or other, by his great love and kindness, there's some little desire to serve him. So even despite so many faults, he allows me to try to purify my existence by rendering that service. That is his great mercy. And great mercy of all of you for tolerating all my faults so nicely so that I can continue purifying myself by engaging in the service of my Guru Maharaj. All of you. Does anyone have questions? You always have questions.
Maharaj,
that's one of my faults. I talk too much. Yes? It's 9:19.
Maharaj, in Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna and that irrespective of other is related to you, friend, relation, guru, anyone, you kill them because that is dharma. But Lord Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and tells, Tunadapi Sunichaina Tarurapi Sahishnina. So the point is, what is the dividing line? When we should shoot arrows, when we should be Tunadapi Sunichaina Tarurapi Sahishnina. With whom we should be shooting arrows, with whom we should be Tunadapi Sunichaina Tarurapi Sahishnina.
That is your question. Haribo. Sometimes grass shoots arrows. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana amaninamana dena kirtaniya sadhavadi. Arjuna was embodiment of that sloka. Because he was in the mood of the servant of the Supreme Lord and conscious that whatever power he had was by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. If Krishna tells you to fight, to say no, I know better than you, that is false ego. To say yes, as your servant I will carry out your order. That is humility. Arjuna was not fighting to defend his own ego.
He was fighting to defend the principles of religion. He was fighting to defend the religious rights of the innocent. And he was fighting according to the direction of God. That fighting is humility. To not fight under those circumstances would be false ego. To defend truth for the sake of service to the truth is humility. To avoid the fight when it is required is false ego. Srila Prabhupada was very humble. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the perfect example of Trinadapi Sunichena. He was the very supreme manifestation of humility. But how did he manifest that humility? For himself, he wanted nothing. For himself, he was willing to accept any abuse. When Ram Chandrapuri was concocting all types of terrible, notorious lies against him, he was saying, yes, it is true. When devotees wanted to retaliate, he said, no, let him be. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Lord Nityananda Prabhu being attacked by Jagai and Madhai, he appeared like fire. He called for his Sudarshan Chakra to destroy them. That is Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sihishna. To defend Krishna, to defend his devotees when that defense is needed, it's humility. To not defend is a type of false ego or fear. He did not do anything for his own selfish personal motivations. He was so humble. But when someone came and spoke the wrong philosophy, he would defeat it like a warrior. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is the humility. He was doing it in the mood of a servant of God, in the servant of truth, in the servant of that person who was an illusion, not in the service of his own false ego. And he gave all credit to where credit is deserved, to the Lord. So who should we fight? Wherever there is injustice, wherever there is a breach of truth, not in a physical or violent way, but in a spirit of preaching, we should defend the truth. That is humility. Why it is humility? Because it is the Lord's order that we live by the truth and defend the truth. It is the order upon everyone's head, according to our capacity. But we should do it in a spirit of service. That is humility. If you see a child being beaten on the street, is it humility to let them be beaten? Or as a service to the child, to the person beating, to God to stop him? That is humility. But then don't put your name in the paper and say, I have saved the child. If someone says, oh, you have done very well, say, it is by the grace of God, I can do nothing. That humility comes through purification of the heart. and purification of the heart is most perfectly achieved through the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. So at this time we will have Harinam.